You're listening to The Berry Pod, tastings from Wine Country Live in the morning
on KVON.
We're happy to have joining us in the studio this morning for an update on coronavirus in Napa County, Dr. Karen Relucio, who is Napa County's health officer. Good morning, and thank you for being here.
Good morning, Barry.
Great to have you back, and I know it's a challenging time, and you all are working hard. How many people do you have on your staff that are engaged in this process right now?
Well, I would say probably, hard for me to say, I'd say about 30 in public health. It's probably half my division. The rest are really doing continuity of operations. But we also have people in other county departments that are participating in the response. So it's really a lot of hands-on deck approach. Mm-hmm.
And you're able to pull people from other departments if you need them?
Yes. At this time, our emergency operations center is operating at the highest level. So we're pulling in people from multiple departments because this is going to affect all of us.
Mm-hmm. So give us a snapshot of the current status of this disease in Napa County.
So at this time, we still have no cases. However, that being said, we are monitoring a lot of contacts to cases, as well as travelers that are returning. We have been monitoring travelers that have come from the Grand Princess cruise ship, as well as others that are exposed in other airplane trips. But fortunately, none of them have come up with symptoms. We've been seeing investigating people that are having flu-like illness, mostly in the hospitals, and we've had we call them persons under investigation, meaning that they are getting tested for coronavirus. And so far, we have not seen a case yet, but I think that it is a matter of time.
Do you feel that, as some people have said, the virus may have been circulating in Northern California for several weeks, actually?
I think that's a fair assumption. I think that, you know, we've had counties that are neighbors to us that have seen community transmission, and we're not exempt from it because the virus knows no borders.
Yeah, to think that it somehow magically has not appeared here when every other county in the Bay Area has cases would be kind of silly.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And it's a matter, the issue is that we haven't detected it yet, and that's, you know, that's mainly what it is. So mm-hmm. Since our neighboring counties are seeing this, you know, we can make the assumption that it is here. It's just that we haven't detected it yet with our testing.
Mm-hmm. And I want to talk about the whole testing issue in just a moment. But before we get into that, the big tsunami for Napa came yesterday afternoon with this announcement from the governor that tasting rooms should close, bars and brew pubs, places of gathering, obviously, where oftentimes you're quite close together. I understand the thinking on that. How does that factor in for you? As we discussed off the air, it's not a directive. It's not an order from the governor. It's a request. How does that filter across to your job?
Yeah, so I would say it's a directive. It's not an enforceable order, meaning that, you know, it's not a legal order. I think that, that being said, you know, that is, pretty much a message that, our, you know, wineries, brew pubs, nightclubs, you know, I think that sends a message that this is really serious. And I think that, the reason why this is being issued is because, we don't want to end up having so much surge in our hospital that we can't take care of the patients adequately. So the biggest threat to the healthcare system is having to ration medical care because there aren't enough hospital beds and there aren't enough ventilators to take care of really sick people. And we're going to have to make the difficult decision in the future whether to allocate a ventilator to one person versus another. And so during these type of pandemic scenarios, we end up having to make that really difficult choice. So this is what this is trying to prevent. So, but it is not an order. Mm-hmm. It's a directive.
At this time.
Yes.
It may become one.
Yes.
I was just relating that some local jurisdictions are making it mandatory. Los Angeles, Palm Springs, Long Beach, there may be others that have come out and said in their municipalities, they are making it mandatory. And that power is with you, if necessary, here?
It is. However, I don't think that is going to be the first step I would take. It's not to, make it an order for tasting room and wineries. I think what we need to do is just to be really careful about, I think that the areas where I would target more are larger events. So, there was a directive last week about keeping canceling or postponing events of greater than 250 people, or if you have events that have more than 10 at-risk people, you also cancel or postpone those events. But at this time, I think my bigger concern are the events that are even over 100, where there isn't adequate social distancing. So if I were to write a legal order today, it wouldn't be to target the wineries, but it would be to target the events that are over 100 people that can't mm-hmm. practice appropriate social distancing and hygiene measures.
Yeah, I was describing this earlier, that when you just say tasting room or winery, that's a pretty broad category. There are places where 100 people are packed into a small space, taking a tour or something. There are others where they don't see 100 people in 2 weeks. So the idea of being able to make some distinction there, might have lesser impact on the economy, possibly. We're talking with Dr. Karen Berluccio. She's Napa County's health officer. This is an update on the coronavirus in Napa County. And again, to recap, if you're just tuning in, there still is no known case. No one has been tested positive for coronavirus in Napa County. Let's talk about the whole testing issue. How many tests have been conducted total? And obviously, these would be on people who presented with the symptoms. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct. So we have tested over 20 people. And part of, to just describe why that seems alarmingly low. In the beginning of COVID-19, testing was very restricted to certain people with travel history, from certain parts. First it was from Wuhan, and then it expanded to Hubei province, and then expanded to China if they're hospitalized, and then it then expanded to other countries that were affected by travel. So it was very restricted to that. And then it has expanded to people hospitalized with pneumonia with no other alternate diagnosis, which then led to more testing of hospitalized people. And so it's been gradually expanding. And it's more expansive now as to who you could test. But then the availability testing is not proportionate to who you could test. So a couple weeks ago when the governor had, it was probably, is it already 2 or 3 weeks ago? I can't keep
right,
track of time.
Right, this is where it gets hard.
Yeah, it was the first week of March when the governor had announced there were 5,000 tests across California. If we look at how many people in California there are, and if you were to look at any given day, how many people could have influenza-like illness, you're talking millions. We're probably saying about, a million at least on a given day. So that, so we still have to, despite the CDC definition, we still have to ration the tests because there aren't enough of them, although they are ramping up. I think the other issue is that outpatient clinics don't have this infection control supplies and the requirement to have a single room that's isolated in order to do testing. So if one of our outpatient doctors or healthcare providers gets exposed while testing someone, Then they're subject to 14 days of not being able to see patients. They're taken out of the workforce, and then they have to self-monitor for 14 days. So there's the risk to the healthcare worker community of testing in their office, which then brings people to the emergency department. And, you know, they don't have the capacity to just test all comers. So it ends up going back to criteria in order to determine who should get tested first. So, and I know that this is really frustrating to people that have an influenza-like illness and they want to know whether they have COVID-19. I think that this is something that we're trying to come up with a solution that hopefully can increase testing yet decrease risk to healthcare workers. Mm-hmm. So, my staff and I have been working all weekend to come up with a drive-through testing. And basically what we would do is healthcare entities from that we're partnering with, such as Queen of the Valley and Olay Health and Kaiser and St. Helena Hospital, we're trying to get all of the commercial labs that they use, which is a limit on how much they can test also. They've set limits that you can only do 10 per day, per account. So with the ability to pool our resources together, hopefully then we're trying to do a drive-through testing, so where the healthcare provider will screen their patients and determine by their criteria whether they can be tested. So by using that and then testing outdoors, we would swab them in their cars, and then that would save on personal protective equipment, of which there is a shortage of.
For the medical personnel.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And also, you minimize exposure to the person that's doing the testing. So we don't end up knocking out, you know, an office full of healthcare providers that tried to test someone, mm-hmm. and then they were all exposed. Mm-hmm. So we're trying to preserve our workforce, preserve personal protective equipment, yet increase our testing ability.
Yeah. There's an old sort of a joke about, you know, the last place you want to be if you're sick is in a hospital, the idea of how things spread in places where people are sick. So it's easy to imagine if you're used to going to Kaiser and there's, you know, a room full of people in the pharmacy and a room full of people waiting here and waiting there, you can't just have people who might have it walking in there, first of all, and then doctors and nurses interacting with them. So this drive-by testing concept seems to make a lot of sense. That's what they're doing in Marin now?
Yes, that's correct. And this was being done in Korea, in South Korea. Mm-hmm. So Marin has been doing it for, I think they may have started a week ago. And, you know, we're following suit because that was really the best way to try to test more people that still have to fit certain criteria mm-hmm. once they're screened by their healthcare providers. And then this is something we would do by appointment. Mm-hmm. We're still having some, you know, implementation issues because we were going to get a medical reserve corps from another county, but they're needed so other counties are really having healthcare surge, so they're mm-hmm. needed in other counties. So it's really, you know, we're trying to get the staffing for it.
What are the other counties that are having that surge?
You know, I'm sure Santa Clara, you know, where there's community transmission, yeah. Santa Clara, San Mateo, San Francisco, Contra Costa, they're all having community transmission in a lot of cases, which means that their hospitals are inundated with patients.
Mm-hmm. And what typically happens in a reciprocity environment is you may start getting requests for some of those patients to come to Napa, where there may be beds still available. Is that going to happen, do you think?
Well, yes. However, our beds have been full. So, you know, there's been a lot more volume in the emergency departments and more people being admitted. So they're, you know, trying to, you know, use their negative pressure rooms are a scarce resource, mm-hmm. and we don't have many of them in Napa County. We probably count in maybe one one hand or one and a half. And they're usually full of other patients, such as people with, getting ruled out for tuberculosis or, just other respiratory illnesses. And so it's, on a given day, a lot of hospitals are operating at capacity to begin with. Mm-hmm. And then when you increase the volumes in the emergency department and increase admissions among, people at risk for COVID-19 or influenza, which is pretty much very, very similar,
right?
Then it already fills beds to capacity.
Yeah. Let me ask a question that may sound kind of heartless in a way, but it's not meant that way, just practical. If a person's presenting with flu-like symptoms, what difference does it really make whether they know they have COVID-19 or just the regular flu? Because the treatment is going to be applied based on their condition. There is no cure for COVID-19, so it doesn't really matter, does it?
Yeah, that's a great question. So for individual people that are not in congregate settings or like a young, healthy person who comes down with flu-like symptoms, they could have influenza. That's what we're seeing more of.
Actually, more likely.
Much more likely.
Than having COVID-19.
Or they could have respiratory syncytial virus, which we're seeing lots of. Mm-hmm. Getting tested for COVID-19 is people want to know what they have, but does it make a difference from a medical management perspective? No, it doesn't. Okay. It satisfies somebody's curiosity of wanting to know, but the behaviors or the management should be the same, which means is, if you're not sick enough, self-isolate at home, don't go to work, increase, your hand hygiene, drink lots of fluids, treat the symptoms of your illness. So it becomes more academic or satisfying curiosity more than anything. Mm-hmm. I think that we're really trying to target testing is in areas where, so for example, if somebody in a nursing home or a residential, skilled nursing facility comes down with flu-like illness and they do not have an alternate diagnosis and they're starting to have an outbreak, I would want to know if there's COVID-19 going on in there, because then this makes a big difference from a public health standpoint as to how to manage that. And it makes, I think the other area that we're really trying to figure out is we have more people hospitalized with pneumonia where a cause has not been determined. And so we want to know if that is impacting people in the hospital. I think the other place where we're trying to test is healthcare workers who are exposed. We've had healthcare workers that have taken care of people with COVID-19 here, and they were under monitoring, but should any of them develop symptoms, we would want to know that, because it is going to help us determine how, how long they're going to have to be out, and what does it mean for all the other healthcare workers that were exposed to them. So I think it's looking at it from a medical and public health perspective of what difference that is going to make. Healthcare workers are scarce resources right now, because they're, if they're taken out from taking care of someone with COVID-19, we need them. They're the frontline people that are fighting this.
Yeah. And, I think we're all indebted to all the people who are engaged in this very actively. I stopped in at the grocery store yesterday, saw someone in scrubs who was either on their way to work or leaving work, and I kind of wanted to say, thanks for what you're doing. I don't know what your job is, but whatever it is, it's difficult right now. Last question in regard to senior care facilities, senior retirement homes, and things like that. There's some special precautions in that regard, and not to make a comparison, but also talking about public facilities like jails and so on. Address all of that and how you manage that.
Yeah, absolutely. These are all priorities for us. So in terms of the residential care facilities, such as nursing homes, long-term care facilities, skilled nursing facilities, and residential care facilities for the elderly, I had put out an order So this is a, you know, this is an order that is a legal order last week to prohibit non-essential visitation to those facilities because they are so at risk. Once we have COVID-19 introduced in those facilities, we are talking about, you know, possibly increasing mortality right there. So this is, you know, this is a precious population that we're trying to preserve the life of. And so this has been an extremely high priority. In terms of homeless, we've been working actively with our homeless and housing division along with the contractors that they work with to increase hygiene and to come up with a way to isolate persons with influenza-like illness should they develop it in the shelter, finding a way to separate them from others that don't have symptoms. So we're actively working on that right now. And we have an additional representative in Emergency Operations Center in order to address that and to ramp up the planning and the implementation of what needs to be done. In terms of the correctional facility or the jail, they're also in our Emergency Operations Center. We've been working, you know, we've been pretty much in touch, you know, several times a week to talk about ways to isolate inmates who come down with influenza-like illness, you know, as well as monitoring them more frequently, monitoring them at intake, and just figuring out, you know, where they can be isolated. And I know that they're really working with the criminal justice system to see, you know, are there people that, you know, that have lower offenses that don't necessarily need to be in corrections at this point.
Right.
So just trying to systemically decrease the population in a jail, as well as making sure there's a careful intake to isolate the ill people, and making sure that inmates are monitored for any type of illness on a daily basis.
It was a step they took in Iran 2 or 3 weeks ago, and they let tens of thousands of people out of jails because they knew these would become hotspots and no controlling it.
That's correct.
Yeah. I said last question, but one more. Where do you recommend and advise people go for information that's up to date? Is there a specific website, a way to stay tuned in?
Yes. I recommend going to our website. It's www.countyanapa.org/coronavirus. Or else if you just go to our main website, it'll be in the front page on the banner. You'll find it.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Karen Relucio, our Napa County Health Officer, and we've set this up so you'll come visit us each Monday at this time, and we can be in touch in the in-between times, of course, if things change, right?
Absolutely.
Thank you very much, and hang in there.
Thank you, Barry.
All right. Time for a break. More to come on Wine Country Live.
Keep it right here. More from the Barry Pod coming up.
On KVON.